It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Obama seeks congressional backing of military action against the Islamic State group. President Obama is asking Congress to formally authorize the use of military force in the conflict against the Islamic State terror group. Speaking at the White House Wednesday, Mr. Obama outlined the goals of the proposal.
A systemic and sustained campaign of airstrikes against ISIL in Iraq and Syria. Support and training for local forces on the ground, including the moderate Syrian opposition. Preventing ISIL attacks in the region and beyond, including by foreign terrorist fighters who try to threaten our countries. Regional and international support for an inclusive Iraqi government. Humanitarian assistance for the innocent civilians of Iraq and Syria who are suffering so terribly under ISIL's reign of horror.
The president said the request will not become an authorization for another ground war with a large commitment of ground forces. He said the authorization would allow him to deploy special forces, it would limit operations to 3 years, and bar troops from what it terms enduring offensive ground combat. The UN Refugee Agency says at least 300 migrants are missing and likely dead after they tried to cross the Mediterranean Sea in inflatable boats. In a separate tragedy announced Tuesday, Italian authorities said at least 29 African migrants died of hypothermia trying to cross the Mediterranean from Libya. The UNHCR says the Italian Coast Guard brought 110 survivors to safety on the Italian island of Lampedusa, about 100 kilometers from the African mainland and a major destination for illegal migrants trying to get to Europe. A record 170,000 crossed the Mediterranean in 2014, one quarter of them fleeing the violence in Syria. More than 3,000 others died attempting that journey. This is VOA News. President Obama Wednesday announced a withdrawal of most American forces sent to West Africa to combat the Ebola epidemic. He said all but 100 of the original deployment of 3,000 troops will return home by April 30th.
Last fall, we saw between 800 and 1,000 new cases a week. Today, we're seeing between 100 and 150 cases a week, a drop of more than 80%. Liberia has seen the best progress. Sierra Leone is moving in the right direction. Guinea has the longest way left to go. Our focus now is getting to zero.
Mr. Obama said the U.S. effort is entering a new phase of expanding a civilian aid, scientific, and health response in West Africa. The World Health Organization says the number of Ebola cases is on the rise for a second week, nearly doubling in Guinea. The region recorded 144 new cases. In the week ending February 8th, nearly 9,200 have died of the virus. Meanwhile, the International Red Cross and Red Crescent Wednesday denounced attacks on its volunteers. The latest attack involving two burial workers beaten Sunday by a mob in the western Guinean town of Forakaria. Liberia's education ministry announced a further postponement of reopening of schools closed 6 months ago to contain the virus. Schools that were to reopen Monday will remain closed until March 2nd. Houthi rebels in Yemen's capital have seized U.S. embassy vehicles after U.S. diplomats left the country following the embassy's closure. The U.S., Britain, and France all announced closures of their embassies because of deteriorating security conditions. U.S. State Department spokesperson Jen Psaki Wednesday said embassy staff are returning to Washington. She hopes the embassy will be able to resume operations soon.
We remain strongly committed to supporting the Yemeni people and will explore options for a return to Sana'a as soon as the situation on the ground improves.
Houthi Shia rebels forced President Abdurrabbo Mansour Hadi and his cabinet to resign. Last week, they dissolved parliament and established a new presidential council to run the country's affairs. Leaders of Ukraine, Russia, France, and Germany extended marathon talks aimed at a ceasefire deal in Ukraine well into Thursday morning without any public sign of a breakthrough. The summit in Minsk was arranged after Germany and France proposed to Russia a peace plan. The summit is taking place against the backdrop of intense fighting in the eastern Ukraine, where Russian speaking is dominant, witnesses some of the most intense and deadly combat yet seen in the 10-month conflict. Ukraine's President Petro Poroshenko threatens to impose martial law if there is a further escalation of the conflict. Human Rights Watch says soldiers of the Sudanese army raped dozens of women and girls in the Darfur town of Tabit in late October and has called for an international investigation into what it says is a crime against humanity. The rights group Wednesday issued a 48-page report challenging repeated denials by Khartoum that a mass rape occurred. Sudan has refused to allow UN African Union peacekeepers in to look at the allegations. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Thursday, February 12th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's president tries to reassure the nation after election delay.
Nobody is saying that they must wipe out Boko Haram completely before we conduct election in this country. But they say that security-wise, there are certain things they need to do so that they will be able to get enough manpower and configure the security architecture.
That's President Goodluck Jonathan of Nigeria. Human Rights Watch says Sudanese army carry out mass rape in Darfur. We'll also get reaction from the Sudanese government. Sierra Leone touts a sharp decline in Ebola infection rate. And President Barack Obama says U.S. troops fighting Ebola in West Africa will soon return home.
Not to declare mission accomplished, but to mark a transition. Thanks to the hard work of our nearly 3,000 troops who deployed to West Africa. Logistics have been set up. Ebola treatment units have been built. Over 1,500 African health workers have been trained.
President Barack Obama speaking Wednesday in Washington. And return to normal life is a tough road for former child soldiers in the Central African Republic. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports in our Black History Month and African History Facts of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan sought to reassure the nation in a televised media chat on Wednesday night, saying the war against Boko Haram will intensify in the weeks ahead, but that elections already pushed back once will hold. Viewers and Locke reports from Abuja.
Nigeria has been a swirl of doubt and conspiracy theory since elections were delayed to March 28th, ostensibly to give security forces more time to fight Boko Haram. Some are skeptical that 6 weeks can accomplish much against the five-year insurgency. President Goodluck Jonathan said he wanted to set the record straight.
Nobody is saying that they must wipe out Boko Haram completely before we conduct election in this country. But they say that security-wise, there are certain things they need to do so that they will be able to get enough manpower and recalibrate or reconfigure the security architecture.
The president said Boko Haram controls 15 local government areas in the Northeast. He promised, quote, serious advances in the next 6 weeks, in large part, he said, due to troop deployment by neighboring countries. The African Union has authorized a 7,500-troop regional force to fight Boko Haram. President Jonathan spoke on state television, flanked by four reporters. He took their questions for just over an hour.
And I don't see why we continue to doubt that elections will not hold. Elections will hold. And the inauguration of the next president will take place 29th of May this year.
President Jonathan is facing fierce competition in his bid for re-election from challenger Muhammadu Buhari. Mr. Jonathan tried to squash speculation that he wants to dismiss the Electoral Commission chief and accusations that the vote postponement was politically motivated. He said the military did not consult him before requesting the delay. The president did raise concern about the country's level of election preparedness at the time of the postponement, saying uneven distribution of voter cards.
That's VOA West Africa correspondent Anne Locke reporting from Abuja, Nigeria. U.S. President Barack Obama has announced that nearly all of the remaining 1,300 American troops currently fighting the Ebola outbreak in West Africa will return home. The White House cites U.S. success in bending the curve of the Ebola epidemic with a decline in the number of new cases in affected countries. VOA correspondent Arul Pandey has more from the White House.
At the height of the epidemic, some 2,800 U.S. military personnel were deployed to West Africa to help contain the deadly virus that has so far claimed more than 9,000 lives in Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia. Now, nearly 5 months after Mr. Obama committed an influx of American troops to stem the outbreak, the president announced Wednesday that all but 100 will be home by April 30th as the U.S. marks a transition in the fight against Ebola.
Not to declare mission accomplished, but to mark a transition. Thanks to the hard work of our nearly 3,000 troops who deployed to West Africa. Logistics have been set up. Ebola treatment units have been built. Over 1,500 African health workers have been trained.
Flanked by healthcare workers, members of the U.S. military, and Ebola survivors, President Obama thanked those on the front lines of the fight and emphasized that while the United States is winding down its military response, it is expanding its civilian response. In the 10 months since the first American personnel deployed to West Africa, the president said the U.S. has helped treat Ebola patients, trace their contacts, promote safe burials, and galvanize the international response. He said the number of new cases in the region has gone from nearly 1,000 a week in October to roughly 150 per week today.
Our focus now is getting to zero, because as long as there's even one case of Ebola that's active out there, risks still exist. Every case is an ember that, if not contained, can light a new fire.
It's a message reinforced this week by United Nations Special Envoy on Ebola, Dr. David Nabarro, while referring to a recent uptick of new cases in Guinea.
The outbreak still presents a grave threat, and we really hope that there will be no complacency among anybody involved in the response.
Nabarro says that in addition to getting the number of cases and transmissions to zero, affected countries will also have to focus on rebuilding their economies and their health systems. Arup Pandey, VOA News, The White House.
Sierra Leone's government says it recorded only 3 new confirmed Ebola cases on Tuesday this week. Government spokesman Abdoulaye Birete said this is an indication that the sustained effort to fight the disease is succeeding. Birete tells reporter Peter Clotty that a meeting Monday between President Ernest Bai Koroma and Guinea's President Alpha Conde in the capital Freetown marked a joint effort to respond to the challenges Ebola poses in neighboring countries.
We are very much encouraged with particularly the confirmed cases for yesterday, or Tuesday, whereby we recorded 3 confirmed cases for the entire country. So that is giving us a glimmer of hope. But it is a hope whereby we continue to remind the public that we shouldn't be complacent at all, that even though we have recorded only 3 cases for Tuesday, this month of February, we don't want people to think it is over. The reason being, we must improve our surveillance system, our contact tracing, and above all, the social mobilization, which no other person but His Excellency the President has been leading throughout the length and breadth of this country.
We also heard reports that President Bai Koroma met with his counterpart and neighboring country president, Alpha Conde, to talk about issues of cooperation in the fight against Ebola. What can you tell me about this meeting and what transpired about the effort to fight Ebola?
For us as a country, we believe, based on expert advice, people that are very much conversant with the outbreak of Ebola in other parts of the world in the past, that even if Sierra Leone were to be declared Ebola-free after the 42-day cycle by the WHO, we will still be vulnerable if neighboring countries like Guinea and Liberia still contend with the virus. That is why yesterday at the international airport, President Koroma met with his colleague head of state counterpart, that is Professor Alpha Conde of Guinea, to see how Guinea can collaborate further with not only Sierra Leone but also Liberia, so that we can promote regional efforts in the fight against the virus. Recognizing that we share common cultures, we share common borders with a lot of illegal crossing points among the 3 countries.
Abdoulaye Birete is spokesman for Sierra Leone's government. He was speaking with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Freetown. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and today is Thursday, February 12. Still to come, Mark Oldman Sports and our Black History and African History Facts of the Day. Daybreak Africa time, it's 14 minutes past the hour. Human Rights Watch says in a new report that Sudanese army soldiers raped more than 200 women and girls in a planned attack in Darfur late last year. As Sela Hennessy reports for VOA from London, analysts say violence in war-torn Darfur is escalating and the international community needs to renew efforts to end the conflict.
Jonathan Loeb from Human Rights Watch authored the report. He says the attack by the Sudanese army was carried out on October 30th of last year. He says the HRW investigation found that at least 221 women and girls were raped in the North Darfur town of Tabit in an attack that lasted 36 hours.
And these included looting of property, beating of men and women, and the mass rape of dozens, if not hundreds, of women and young girls.
Allegations of the attack first emerged in early November with a report by Radio Dabenga, a Netherlands-based station. Sudan denied the report. The African Union United Nations Mission in Darfur, or UNAMID, was initially restricted from entering the town, but was allowed brief access to Tabit on November 9th. It said none of those interviewed had confirmed any incident of rape took place in Tabit. However, the UN envoy on sexual violence, Zainab Hawa Bengura, later said that heavy military presence during the UN's visit raised concerns that a wall of silence had been created. Loeb says the UN now needs to provide protection to the civilians who are still living in fear. He says the UN mission, which is stationed about 50 kilometers outside of the town, should establish a permanent operating base inside Tabit.
The women and the civilians in this village, some have fled to internally displaced persons camps and to neighboring villages, but most of them are still there in their homes and they don't have anywhere to go and they are still completely vulnerable. There is a constant military presence in this town. And the civilians have no defense against that.
Jeremy Taylor is an expert on Darfur at the University of London. He says the attack, which Sudan has denied, could be a result of weak command and control. Some armed groups, he says, might operate on their own initiatives. But historically, he says, there has been evidence of similar attacks directed by the Sudanese government.
Generally speaking, the history of Darfur and certainly the evidence secured by the International Criminal Court, for example, is clear that these kinds of atrocities are recognized and most likely ordered by high-level political and intelligence figures in Khartoum.
For this report, Human Rights Watch spoke to residents and former residents of Tabit by telephone due to access restrictions. Selah Hennessy for VOA News, London.
A Sudanese government official is accusing the U.S.-based Human Rights Watch of trying to tarnish Sudan's image, particularly at a time when the government of President Omar al-Bashir is trying to improve relations with the West and bring about national dialogue. Human Rights Watch released a report Wednesday in which it accused Sudan's army of raping 221 women and girls in the North Darfur town of Tabit in October last year. Information Minister Ahmed Bilal says the report should not be believed because it was conducted by phone without seeing the alleged victims. In addition, Bilal says Sudanese tradition forbids the rape of women.
There is now serious talks with the American administration, and there might be some sort of a response and improvement in relations. If there is a progress in the army, there is a Sudan national dialogue going on. They came out with such allegations. Do anybody would believe that somebody talks in the phone with 60 girls? He didn't see them. He didn't recognize and make sure that was their identification and take this seriously as a document against the government of Sudan. Who can believe this? A respectable organization can go in such a way just for a denial of what happened in Sudan and accusations. I think now this is a great fall for this organization. Anybody should not respect such sort of report getting from this organization.
The United Nations envoy on sexual violence, Zainab Bengura, said that perhaps these people were quiet, did not want to talk because of your government's military presence during the time of the visit.
This is another thing. They went there, they made their investigations, they found no proof, and after that, because there is a presence of thousands of some people from the army were there. I tell you that the UNAMID themselves, whenever they want to go outside the main cities, they need for themselves protection from the government. They ask the army to protect them and to accompany them, and that is why.
Mr. Minister, why do you think that Human Rights Watch is revisiting this incident?
I think that now that it's a great fall for the human rights credibility. saying that they depend on telephone calls from some ladies saying that they are being raped. Actually, I think they are building on some sort of accusations. Our morals as Sudanese are against this. Our traditions are against this. We have a war between us and the South for more than 50 years. Never reported that our soldiers have committed such things. Now they are doing this. We have to stop this. We are a peaceful country looking for peace, calling our opposition to join the national dialogue. We want to improve our relations with other countries, especially with America on the West, and the Human Rights Watch and others are against this because of tariffs.
Ahmed Bilal, Sudan's information minister, he was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. As the Central African Republic struggles to end a nearly two-year-old cycle of sectarian violence, the plight of some 10,000 children used as soldiers in the conflict serves as a brutal legacy. Often, their release by armed groups is only the first step in a long and traumatized road to try to return to a so-called normal life. Emily Yap reports for VOA News from Bangui.
Lionel and Laura, not their real names, had known each other as far back as they can remember. The two friends both grew up in a small town about 150 kilometers from the capital, Bangui. Earlier last year, members of the ex-Seleka rebels arrived and killed Lionel's mother and Laura's father. Angry and eager for revenge, they joined in a rival armed group, says Lionel, who was 15 years old at the time. Laura was just 13. The word was getting around in the village. The anti-Baleka militias were enrolling people to fight. He says they joined and were sent to the front line where they fought all the time. This lasted for 4 months until UNICEF, along with family members, managed to get both children out of the rank of the anti-Baleka. Lionel now lives with his father in Bangui. Laura lives with her aunt. But reintegration will take far longer than the children's time in arms. Laura's aunt says they have never talked about what her niece did or experienced while part of the armed group, but she clearly sees how it changed her. At home, her life in the armed group is always on her mind. Sometimes she will make a weapon with bits of wood, she says. Her aunt says Laura is trying to prepare other children in the house to be ready to fight because that is what she knows. The Italian humanitarian agency CUPI provides psychosocial support not only for the children but also for their family members. CUPI psychologist Edouard Conan says it is sometimes difficult for families to understand how their children have changed and they sometimes end up rejecting them.
On s'adresse aux parents pour leur expliquer un peu les difficultés vécues par leur enfant.
So we explain it to them and we guide them on what attitude to adopt to patch things up, to reestablish a relationship and their role as parents instead of censoring or rejecting their own children, he says. CUPI's aim is to make sure that, ultimately, the child will be accepted back into the family. But the reintegration is made even more difficult by the fact that many of the children go back to live in the same neighborhood still controlled by the armed groups they used to belong to. Sometimes, says Lionel, they meet in the street. We say hi to each other, but it doesn't go further than that, he says, because he never wants to return to that life. Lionel and Laura are now back in school. Emily Yab for VOA News in Bangui.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. Ethiopian double world indoor champion Genzebe Dibaba is among six nominees for the 2015 Laureus Sportswoman of the Year Award. The annual award is in recognition of outstanding international sports achievements in 2014. In a space of 14 days, Dibaba established a new women's world record in 1500 meters, 3000 meters, and a world best in 2 miles. She clinched gold medals in 1500 meters and 3000 meters at the World Indoor Championships in Sopot, Poland, and won the 3000 meters at the IAAF Continental Cup in Marrakech, Morocco. The winner of the award will be named in Shanghai, China on the 14th of April. In the United Arab Emirates, Kenyan's Mary Keitany and defending champion Priska Jeptoo face off in the women's event at the Ras Kaimi Half Marathon tomorrow, Friday. Keitany set a world record of 1 hour, 5 minutes and 50 seconds at this event 4 years ago. Later, her compatriot Florence Kiplagat improved the world mark by 38 seconds in Barcelona, Spain last year. However, the organizers have made alterations to the course, which could see faster times returned, and therefore the current world record of 1 hour, 5 minutes and 12 seconds is under threat. Kenya's Rotterdam and Chicago Marathon champion Eliud Kipchoge is the frontrunner to win the men's race. Turning to football, FIFA President Sepp Blatter will face three challenges at the FIFA presidential elections, FIFA revealed in Zurich. The Netherlands Football Federation head Michael van Praag, former Portugal midfielder Luis Figo, Jordan Asia Football Federation Vice President Prince Ali bin Al Hussein, and Blatter satisfied the FIFA Ethics Committee's criteria, permitting them to seek election to the highest office in the world of football. The elections are due on the 29th of May in Zurich. Meanwhile, Equatorial Guinea has been fined $100,000 for the violent conduct of some of their fans during the semi-final between Equatorial Guinea and Ghana at the just-concluded Orange Africa Cup of Nations in Malabo, the Confederation of African Football revealed in Cairo. Equatorial Guinea will also foot the medical bill for 36 Ghanaian fans injured during the fracas. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Omer in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Time now for our Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 12. On this day in 1909, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the NAACP, was founded. The NAACP is the oldest and largest U.S. civil rights organization. Its main goal is to bring about social, political, and economic equality for black people. Also on this day in 1809, Abraham Lincoln was born in Hudgenville, Kentucky. Lincoln was the 16th president of the United States. In 1863, 2 years after the U.S. Civil War started, he issued the Emancipation Proclamation to free black slaves in some southern states. Slavery was one of the causes of the Civil War. On this day in 1934, retired American professional basketball player William Felton Bill Russell was born in West Monroe, Louisiana. He played for the Boston Celtics of the National Basketball Association, NBA, from 1956 to 1969. A five-time NBA Most Valuable Player, Russell was the centerpiece of the Celtics dynasty, winning 11 NBA championships during his 13-year career. On this day in 1944, Etta Morton became the first African-American to sing in the White House. She sang for President Franklin D. Roosevelt. And on this day in African history, in 1961, Congolese leader Patrice Emery Lumumba became a Pan-Africanism martyr following his murder by Moïse Kapenda Shombi's forces in Elizabethville, which is today Lumumbashi. Those are your Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 12th. Congratulations to Chika Aniobi of Suleja in Niger State, Nigeria, and Tam John Elvis Ali of Rainbow Bilingual College in Furake Chan, West Region, Cameroon. You are the winners of our February 11th question. Who is the first African-American to be elected national chairman of the U.S. Democratic Party? The answer, Ron H. Brown. Now, here is our question for today, February 12. What did Virginia slave Henry Brown do to achieve his freedom? Once again, what did Virginia slave Henry Brown do to achieve his freedom? Send your answers to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. Remember to include your mailing address. And that's it for this Thursday, February 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oldman, along with our engineer Zara Abuze, I'm James Butte saying have a lovely Thursday.
Sports fans, this is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. And on Fridays, you can also hear my 30-minute show at 17:30 UTC. On the internet, like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Check voaafrica.com for the addresses and enjoy the show.
Next on Let's Talk, join host Sunday Shumari and his guests discussing dress code. This light-hearted show discusses topics of your interest with some hilarity. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.